This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 20th of December 2024. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 19th of December, 2024. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: critical incident called at hospital, plan defeated after criticism, and woeful toilets make me ashamed of city. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Critical incident called at hospital. The trust says no capacity to admit further patients. A critical incident was declared at Winchester Hospital with patients urged to seek alternative treatment. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust made the call on Monday afternoon as a high admission rate has put pressure on services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke. It was lifted yesterday afternoon as the Chronicle went to press. The Trust said a high number of infectious patients requiring isolation and a low discharge rate contributed to the declaration, which they say was not taken lightly. It added, "Beds across both hospitals are full, and attendance at our emergency departments is extremely high, which means there is currently no capacity to admit further patients needing our care. Residents are urged to speak to NHS 111 or attend a pharmacy or urgent treatment centre if they need help, as there will be an extremely long wait for the non-life-threatening conditions." It follows a warning last week with 9 in 10 acute general beds occupied across the trust. Health leaders nationally said hospitals are busier than ever at this time of year, even before the cold weather strikes in January and February. As part of the response to the critical incident, the Trust will look for support across the health system to discharge patients who no longer require acute care and limit the number that need to come to the acute hospital. Julie Dawes, chief nurse at the Trust, said there are two ways the public can help at this time. Firstly, by only attending our emergency departments if acutely unwell or injured, and secondly, by collecting loved ones who are ready for discharge. A considerable number of beds are being used to care for individuals who would be more comfortably recuperating in a home setting. Our ward teams can help with medication or equipment, so if you can, please have the conversation and collect loved ones. This will free up capacity for someone who is in need of hospital treatment and care. Danny Chambers, MP for Winchester, has addressed the government about what he has called the appalling crisis. He's written to the Secretary of State saying the residents of the city deserve better. The letter reads, "I'm calling on the government to take immediate action to address the appalling crisis at Winchester Hospital, which on Monday afternoon announced that it was full and could not admit any more patients. This was an entirely predictable and avoidable situation. At any one time, there are between 160 and 200 people at our hospital in Winchester who are ready to be discharged, but have nowhere to go." And he adds, "I'm therefore urging the government to fund 200 extra social care packages so patients can leave hospital as soon as they're well enough to do so." Dr. Chambers writes, This would make a massive difference to healthcare in this area. People needing emergency treatment would not be faced with what amounts to a closed hospital, and 200 additional care places would reduce waiting times for routine operations. This would also make sense financially. It costs around £850 to keep someone in a hospital bed, but less than half of this amount to fund a social care package. The current government is not responsible for the crisis in the NHS, but it has a responsibility to take practical and sensible measures to solve it. Winter comes every year, and the government needs to properly plan for it, not just accept that it is normal for hospitals to be full and unable to treat patients.
Plan defeated after criticism. Campaigners have won the battle to stop plans that would see an increase to the number of lorries driving through Twyford and Coldon Common. Hockley Golf Club applied for permission to develop a sustainable irrigation system, with villages fearing that would mean an extra 50 HGVs a day on the B3335 for at least 3 years. Planning officers recommended refusal, with the final decision coming at the South Downs National Park Authority Planning Subcommittee on Thursday, December the 12th. Councillor Wayne Lawton, Chair of Planning at Twyford Parish Council, objected to the plans, telling the subcommittee, "There is no doubt that during the construction period the area will look unsightly and take years to regain normality. But once the scars are gone and the hillsides green, will the landscape really look amiss, and will anyone remember what it was like before? Put in context, will it matter when nearby lies the ugly M3 cutting or the South Winchester Park and Ride with lights ablaze at night, each severe and man-made changes to the landscape? I believe it does. This is an historic part of the Winchester district, and every means for its protection must be taken." Councillor Sue Cook, City Councillor for Twyford and Coldon Common, raised concerns from residents over the number of heavy goods vehicles. She said, "Sadly, a large percentage of them, when dumping their waste in the South Downs National Park, turn left and trundle through the villages of Twyford, Coldon Common, Fair Oak and beyond, empty. And Highways doesn't seem to have a problem with that. Residents do. The road, the B3335, is a national speed limit section when it leaves the slip road, and it is driven in a very dangerous and aggressive manner. And those who which... So I can't, don't understand this, sorry. And those something or other to who prefer to cycle and walk risk their lives daily." Paul Wynne, speaking on behalf of Hockley Golf Club, said it would be disastrous if the plans were refused and the irrigation system was unable to be implemented. He said, "Potable water used for irrigation is not a sustainable use of a limited resource. Could cause us to be shut off." The committee voted to support the officer's recommendation, refusing the application.
Woeful toilets make me ashamed of city. A Winchester resident who has questioned the council over the city's woefully inadequate public toilets has said he is totally ashamed of its facilities. Speaking at the City Council Cabinet, Julian Perkins lamented the condition of the facilities on Market Lane and in Abbey Gardens, noting that the disabled toilets at one of the sites were swimming in water. He said, "I felt totally ashamed of Winchester when, upon exiting the disabled toilet, I witnessed an overseas visitor who was disabled herself, having to change her very young baby's nappy, using a concrete bollard just outside the toilet on which to lay the baby down." Aside from this, Mr. Perkins felt the council could do more with the money set aside for revamping facilities around the district. He said, "Since it was over a year ago that I was told that a total of £760,000 had been agreed and funded to upgrade the toilets in the Winchester district, has that money been spent? And if so, where? What on? I need to reiterate that while there has been a small improvement at the Market Lane block, they are still woefully inadequate," added Mr. Perkins. "I visited the site last Wednesday. The bin is still an open top, and the floor was swimming in water. It had been mopped, but excess water was left everywhere. I recently spoke with a local trusted plumber who stated that the works I described to him that had been done in the disabled area could not possibly have cost more than £2,000. Cabinet, please ask yourselves how many of our valued visitors will leave with a bad impression." Cabinet member Councillor Lucille Thompson replied, "I'm really sorry that you had a bad experience when you visited Market Lane recently and that you found that the toilet wasn't in the state that you would like to see it in. We have indeed carried out a refurbishment and we did spend considerably more than the £2,000 on that particular building." She added that the council has made changes to how the toilets are cleaned and that it will look at updating the facilities at the Abbey Gardens public toilets in the new year. Councillor Thompson said, "I'm very much aware that having clean and up-to-date facilities is really important to our visitor economy and to our residents, obviously."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Crockford, Mina Crockford, at home on the 30th of November, aged 96. Davidson, Doreen Davidson, on the 22nd of November, aged 83. Davis, Peter John Davis, at Winchester Hospice on the 6th of December, aged 88. Diamond, Harry Diamond, on the 7th of December. Hammersley, Brian Richard Hammersley, at Tegfield House on the 2nd of December, aged 83. Harfield, Basil Vernon Harfield, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 4th of December, aged 88. Hayes, Kathleen Joan Hayes, on the 5th of December, aged 93. Martin, Terry Martin, known as Tink, on the 4th of December at Winchester Hospice. Murray, Kathy Murray, née Whitmarsh, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 27th of November, aged 51. Quarrenden, Pauline Quarrenden, on the 3rd of December, aged 94. Russell, Deanna Phyllis Russell, at Winchester Hospice on the 7th of December, aged 79. Snook, Ivor Jeffrey Snook, at home on the 26th of November, aged 89. White, David Raymond White, on the 30th of November, aged 78. Brockway, Stanley Frederick Brockway, known as Stan, at home on the 4th of December, aged 79. Sorry, correction, aged 75. Butt, Kenneth George Butt, at home on the 18th of November, aged 78. Now we have Christian Comment.
Christian Comment this week is entitled "Lovely, as far as I could tell through tears," and it's by Moira Redmond. I was visiting my in-laws in their small English village this time of year and took my children to a nativity in their church. It wasn't my home, it wasn't my denomination, and I knew no one. I seated us in the front row so the children could see and realised that some of the organising ladies were looking across, one particularly staring at us. My daughter actually whispered, "Is that lady cross with us?" I was concerned that we had taken somebody's reserved seats. Oh dear, was this event going to spoil my list of great nativity memories? My daughter had played Mary at St. Peter's School in Winchester when she was 5, and I said at the time she did very well, as far as I could tell through my tears. But she told me firmly that it didn't matter who played Mary, everyone was important, everyone was part of the play. And I thought what a good job the school was doing. I'd heard horror stories of some nativities with jostling for parts and some children feeling excluded. Not at our school. At a play group in another local church, there was a very informal but perfect nativity where the children could pick their role. My 3-year-old son fancied being one of the 3 kings, but then discovered there was also a cow costume. Unable to decide, he went for both. He looked completely splendid in a cow tunic and hood with crown placed around the cow's ears, and a purple cape and a gold present in his hands. Hoofs. We moved to America, a church nativity service. I was put in charge of a group who've gone down in the family history as the Naughty Shepherds. We had to wait at the back of the church till it was our moment to run on with some stuffed sheep. This idle time was hard to police. I had to decide between going after the boys who were looking through the food bank contributions box for something to eat, or ones who were trying to climb into the baptismal font, which was a full-sized immersion pool. But we all made it to the stable on time. So, what happened in the village church I mentioned earlier? Well, the very important lady eventually came over to us, and I waited braced to be told we were doing something wrong. We had to move. She said, "Would your children like to take part in our nativity? We have spare costumes and they can be angels. The big children will look after them. It doesn't matter a bit that they haven't been to rehearsals." In that country parish, Mary and Joseph came into the church on a real donkey, and it was lovely, lovely again, as far as I could tell through the tears. A true nativity is not about the show or a perfect performance or a reward for good behaviour. It's about including everyone and welcoming the stranger and telling that eternal story one more time. You can go from a big city in the USA to a tiny village in England, and there will always be people who know what it is, what is important in the Christian life. A happy and blessed Christmas to you all. And that was from Moira Redman.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Emailing letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have 10 letters this week on a variety of subjects, and we'll start with the first one,
which is entitled "Praise for Dean" from Professor Tom Watson. I write to add to the support for Dean Catherine Ogle of Winchester Cathedral, as expressed by Jean Ritchie, KC, Chronicle Letters, December the 5th, and Bruce Parker, MBE, Chronicle Letters, December the 12th. My perspective is that of the recently retired Deputy Chairman of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral. In that role, and as a member of the cathedral community, I have got to know Dean Catherine well. She has given her all to the cathedral, its community, and to Winchester through one of the most challenging periods outside wartime that we have experienced as a society. Her leadership during the extremes of COVID, which kept the cathedral at the heart of the community, was excellent. Her steadiness, guidance, determination that worship must continue, and love for everyone were exemplary. The recovery of the cathedral, the city and central Hampshire owed much to her and was an example of Christian witness in action. Dean Catherine has brought joy, happiness and smiles to Winchester, and I was particularly grateful for her friendship when I served as a trustee of the Friends. Along with her personable manner is a lot of wisdom and deep thought. I will miss her, as will the vast majority of cathedral goers. And having attended recent cathedral services, I can report that attendances are good, the communion queues are long, and the choral liturgy is as splendid as ever. It is time for everyone who loves the cathedral to come back together and fully support this great church and its clergy and staff. That letter is from Professor Tom Watson, Branksome Close, Pitt Manor, Winchester.
This letter from Mary Calais is entitled Well Said, Bruce. Three cheers for Bruce Parker's letter in the Hampshire Chronicle on December the 12th. As someone who served the cathedral for 47 years and has a certificate to prove it, I can endorse everything he says about the Dean. I commend its publication and everything he has written. And that letter was from Mary Calais, Silchester Place, Hyde in Winchester.
And this letter on the same subject is headed Misguided. And it's from Alison Evans, Chief Operating Officer, and Gary Carpenter, Chief Finance Officer at Winchester Cathedral. As senior members of staff at the cathedral, we cannot stand by and allow our dean to be subjected to the unwarranted personal attack and distortion of the truth set out in Mr. Loudon's letter, Urgent Action Needed Now Over Crisis at Winchester Cathedral, on November 28th. Equating people attending a service who do not take the communion wafer or wine to those on hunger strike is an extraordinary leap of the imagination. People do not come forward for communion for all sorts of reasons. Illness, shyness, or simply not committed Christians, and would be astonished or offended to be labelled as hunger strikers. But whatever reasons people may have for not taking communion, including those who may have declined to do so as a gesture of dissent, Mr. Loudon's personal attack on the Dean is offensive. This misguided letter defames Dean Catherine Ogle, and to imply some equivalence of the Archbishop's resignation and Dean Catherine's retirement is simply malicious. We invite everyone to come to the cathedral for an Advent or Christmas service, to a contemplative evensong, or to one of the joyful market carol services, to experience for themselves this place and its choral music. The cathedral is thriving, and we are both proud and humbled to be part of this special community under the Dean's leadership. And that's from Alison Evans and Gary Carpenter of Winchester Cathedral.
This letter from Jill Hannington is entitled Praise for A and E. Please may I, through your columns, share my praise and gratitude to Winchester A and E and my doctor at St Mary's Surgery. Recently I had to go to Winchester A and E on a Sunday. On arrival, after a short wait, I was seen by the first triage nurse, then had my blood pressure taken and many blood samples. Then I was moved to another crowded waiting room and was seen by a lovely young doctor who informed me that they had found something in my blood results which meant that they would have to admit me, which was a bit of a shock. I went back to the waiting area to wait for a bed, but was taken ill and put on a bed in the clinical room with a saline drip. However, the hospital was so busy, I stayed in A&E in the clinical room overnight, where they looked after me wonderfully and kept popping in to make sure I was okay, despite the huge full waiting area, which carried on through the night with no let-up. They were incredible. How they kept going, I do not know. Added to this, in the middle of the night, I could hear a man shouting, and one of the doctors was punched in the face, but carried on working. Later in the night, they came into the clinical room I was in and took furniture out, then put another bed in, all done very quietly and efficiently. I know the staff were worried about how busy they were at this time, before the normal busy time started. Seeing in the press that a quad epidemic of flu, COVID, norovirus, etc. is expected, my thoughts and prayers go out to all medical professionals at this time. The next day I was transferred to a ward where excellent care continued. I cannot praise Winchester Hospital enough. I have made sure I and my family have all had our jabs to try and help. Please may I also thank my GP at St Mary's, who referred me to my consultant because he thought I had a rare condition, so I now get the appropriate treatment. My consultant and occupational therapist are brilliant. I have always respected the medical profession, but having seen the A&E department in Winchester, we are so lucky to have them and should do all we can to help them as they will be working over the Christmas period. Wishing everyone a very happy and safe Christmas. Jill Hannington, Weyhill Road, Andover.
This letter from Roger Bell is entitled No Overall Gain. The letter by Patrick Cosgrove in the Hampshire Chronicle on December the 12th refers to inheritance tax and family farming. Two important points are raised. The first is the suggestion that exemptions in return for more nature-friendly farming practices may be available. Two times in the 20th century these islands were blockaded. It is entirely possible that this could happen again in our uncertain world this century. In this case, it is the responsibility of every government to feed its people. Turning land over to environmentally friendly practices will deny that land and its farmers the opportunity to produce food. In the meantime, we eat beans flown in from Chile, not very green or environmentally friendly either. The second point is the entire foolishness of the government's proposal about IHT and family farms. What two-tier Keir and Rachel from accounts don't realise is that when farmers have to sell bits of land to pay the inheritance tax, the buyers will be the many who have a spare £1 million. They will buy the 100 acres and rent it out to be farmed. So after 2 years, it is tax-free instead of getting hit for 40%. The removal of IHT relief for family farms will result in the unintended consequences of no overall gain for HMRC, as the relief is merely passed along the line to the lucky buyer, who would have paid it if they hadn't suddenly found this tax break. This failure is due to poor economic judgment based on a lack of understanding of the determination and wiliness of human beings. But then that is why the failing TTK and hopeless RFA are socialists, is it not? And that letter was from Roger Bell, Piley Bailey, Lymington.
And this one is a letter from Duncan Hodgson, labelled Backing Farmers. After seeing London grind to a halt for the second time in as many months, I really want to throw my support for the farmers who have gotten a very bad deal from the Labour government. The budget was one very big middle finger to them, and when I hear that they want to go and strike over Christmas, depriving millions with no food, then I will absolutely support any decision 100%. We cannot let Labour and their friends at BlackRock buy up large swathes of the British countryside, as it will be the end for this country of ours. And that's from Duncan Hodgson, Dakota Way, Eastleigh.
Shameful Lessons is the title of this letter from Peter Rees. We have yet again been shamed into learning about another murder of an innocent child within a family known to social services, the police, and education. In 1974, as a very young and inexperienced primary school teacher, I remembered the sense of responsibility installed in me by my first head teacher to report anything I was unhappy or uncertain about concerning a young child. In that year, Maria Colwell, aged 7, was murdered by her stepfather. 50 years on, we have robust institutional safeguarding procedures to protect children. Despite these statutory prevention measures, over the past 5 years, there were 52 child deaths in the UK. Sara Sharif is the latest soul to be added to a very long list. Following every such occurrence, a thorough and time-consuming review takes place to try and determine cause, failures in communications and actions, responsibilities and lessons learned. From the Committee of Inquiry report into Maria's murder, one conclusion stands out, quote, "A failure of system compounded of several factors, of which the greatest and most obvious must be that of the lack of or ineffectiveness of communication and liaison." In a dissenting note, Olive Stevenson, a senior social work member of the inquiry, said, "I share my colleagues' views on the failure of various systems for which all of us must take a share of responsibility. In my opinion, by far the most serious failures in this sad story were in communication within and between agencies. Although we should remember the backdrop of 14 years' decimation and near annihilation of public services, we don't need another inquiry into a preventable death. We don't need hand-wringing and responsibility buck-passing. We need to use the safeguards we have created and preventative actions taken immediately with much improved joined-up cooperation by those responsible." So writes Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And we have here a letter from another regular correspondent, Tony Gaster from Oliver's Battery. And this is entitled Watery Mess. "I read that we are soon to be asked for huge increases in our water bills. Since privatisation, our own water company, Southern, seems not to be able to manage well. It is said to be awash with debt. And remember, unlike energy, we have no choice of supplier. We are all shocked by untreated sewage being regularly disposed of in the sea and our rivers. Yet nobody is held to account. Not the company managers, not the environment agency. Government over the years seems to have been inadequate, yet we are now being asked to pay. Surely somebody somewhere elected to high office must make a decision and sort out this mess. And that was from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery in Winchester.
And this is a letter from Judith Martin entitled Unsafe Turn. Excuse me. I have to write in response to Marion Keane of Peninsula Square, who says the benefits of the temporary pedestrian crossing between Clifton Terrace and St James's Terrace are clear. Having lived here since long before Peninsula Square became residential, we have never experienced more than minor inconvenience when crossing on foot. By all means, keep the lights. They are clearly helpful for the less able. But I've seen pedestrians push the button and wait, and it seems to take a long time for the lights to change when they could perfectly well have crossed at least once. As she says, the bus in the photo I took, and which the Chronicle published recently, was going downhill, having already passed through the lights. But Miss Keane is missing my point, which is that the lights are tackling the wrong problem. The problem is that barely anyone, bus drivers included, takes the slightest notice of the 20-mile-per-hour limit that is in place from the end of Clifton Hill to the rest of town. Traffic is too fast and the bridge too narrow. Pedestrians are squeezed between the road and the wall of the railway bridge. Adding traffic lights does nothing to solve that problem. In fact, if Miss Keane looks at the bridge, she will see that a sizeable area has been fairly recently repaired when a large vehicle coming downhill ploughed into it. The two no-left turns from Romsey Road into Clifton Terrace, down Romsey Road, and the one-way restriction on Clifton Hill do nothing to help pedestrians or to prevent rat running or help driver visibility, both given as reasons for changes. In fact, they cause extra journey distance and thus, for most of us, fuel use and pollution. And anyone who lives in the area knows that the really unsafe turn is from Clifton Road into St Paul's Hill. Yet that is what traffic increasingly has to do. At least, following the recent letters, a couple of slabs of rubber curb have been removed, allowing cyclists to cross Romsey Road more sensibly. Surely that was a problem that should have been foreseen. And that letter is from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Grandson Hails Best Christmas Ever, and it's from Alan Sawford. I am writing in response to the article Refunds Offer as Fake Santa Ruins the Magic, Hampshire Chronicle, December the 12th. It was about Hampshire Cultural Trust offering refunds for its Winchester Great Hall Santa's Grotto. The article caused needless anxiety amongst those of us who had bought tickets for a magical visit to Santa Claus in the Great Hall with young children. I say needless because the event was excellent. My five-year-old grandson said, "Best Christmas ever!" as he left the hall after more than 2 hours of fun. I took my five grandchildren and their parents to the event on Saturday, and we had a great time. It was well organised, the elves were very friendly, and the atmosphere was lovely. At no time did we feel rushed, and it wasn't crowded. The children enjoyed the magical build-up to seeing Santa, excuse me, and once we were with the great man, I can confirm he was very authentic, with a real beard. The presents were well chosen and of good quality. We all enjoyed our Glühwein or hot chocolate and mince pies afterwards, and then spent another happy hour doing crafts, dressing up and listening to stories from a friendly elf. Instead of running a negative story that made ticket holders anxious, why not run a positive story? I'm sure the elves would love to see you, and Santa would be very welcoming. Merry Christmas. That's from Alan Sawford, Oliver's Battery Road, South Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will be followed by Letter from Westminster, and then First Person.
This week's editorial comment is entitled Time Now for Radical Action on NHS Crisis. In recent years, the Hampshire Chronicle has commented on plans that would see the downgrading of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, with the opening of a new £700 to £900 million hospital by the M3 near Basingstoke. Whether that hospital is ever built remains to be seen, but a more pressing health issue is grabbing attention now. On Monday, the Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust declared a critical incident because its hospitals in Winchester and Basingstoke are full. It is only December and the weather has been mild. What will it be like after a cold snap with snow and ice in January and February? This is an appalling state of affairs and the result of decades of poor management by all the main political parties. Winchester MP Danny Chambers is right to highlight the importance of the social care problem in all this, essentially where patients are well enough to be discharged but have nowhere to go. Of course, extra money will address this, but it is a sticking plaster. What is needed is a radical overhaul of the NHS and social care. Why are the two separate? It would be a massive undertaking, and there are powerful vested interests at play. But it seems crazy that the two are standalone empires when in reality they operate in the same area. The bureaucratic savings would be immense and the health benefits also huge. Politicians in the past have steered clear, but if ever there was a time for a government to properly tackle this, it is now, with Labour only 6 months into a 5-year term and with a huge majority.
And this is a letter from Westminster. The question of assisted dying is one of the most ethically complex debates we face as lawmakers. I approached my decision with immense care, seeking as much understanding as possible. I received a huge amount of correspondence, roughly split evenly. I appreciate the thought and care that went into each letter. I also met doctors, lawyers, and representatives of religious organizations to understand all perspectives. At present, assisted dying is effectively decriminalized for those who can afford to travel to clinics abroad. This creates an inequality where only those with financial means can access this option. I believe it is wrong for the UK to offshore an issue that is as morally and ethically important as this. I was also moved by stories from constituents who shared the pain and suffering of their loved ones that their loved ones endured in their final days. While I strongly advocate for better palliative care and will continue to do so, I also recognise its limits. For those with less than 6 months to live, facing unrelievable suffering, the choice to end life on their terms offers a dignified alternative. It is crucial to emphasise that my vote at this stage does not mean the bill is set in stone or guaranteed to become law. This vote at the second reading stage is only the beginning of a long process. It represents broad support for the principles of the bill, but allows for further debate and amendments. I will continue to advocate for the safeguards to be strengthened, and if, at any point, I'm not satisfied with the safeguards, I will withdraw my support. Protecting vulnerable individuals from coercion or undue pressure is absolutely essential. While the bill is already includes some of the strictest safeguards of any assisted dying law in the world, I believe there is always room to strengthen them further, and I will work towards that during the legislative process. I will advocate for even greater clarity and robustness in these protections to ensure they are as strong as possible. I've met with disabled people, listened to their concerns, and I will be working to ensure that they are specifically protected by this legislation. I respect and empathise with those who oppose the bill, whether for religious beliefs, ethical principles, or concerns about its potential impact on medical professionals. These are profound and valid arguments. I've weighed these concerns carefully, but for me, they do not outweigh the rights of individuals to avoid unnecessary suffering. I also recognize the slippery slope argument, the fear that this bill could lead to broader or unintended applications. However, the courts have made it clear that any changes to the law would require full parliamentary scrutiny and approval, ensuring that this issue remains within the control of elected representatives. The bill will now move to the committee stage, where it will face detailed examination and potential amendment. I will carefully scrutinise any changes to ensure that the safeguards are robust and that my concerns, alongside those of my constituents, continue to be addressed. It is only after this process and subsequent votes in both the House of Commons and the House of Lords that the bill could become law. I do not pretend that this issue has been easy answers. I have great respect for those who hold different views. For me, this bill is about providing dignity and choice at the end of life. But I remain deeply committed to ensuring that the law includes robust protections and reflects the gravity of the decision it allows. And that is the Westminster letter from Danny Chambers.
First person this week is written by Kimberly Barber, who is the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle, and it's entitled We're Still at the Heart of the City. As 2025 approaches, I just wanted to take a moment to thank every person who has made 2024 a great year for the Hampshire Chronicle. It's been a busy year, and our team has seen some changes, but the Hampshire Chronicle has remained right at the heart of the city, steadfastly reporting on all the city's twists and turns, representing all walks of life. We have grown our website massively during 2024 and are now regularly seeing more than 1 million clicks each month. We have a huge social media following, with more than 16,000 people following us on Facebook and nearly 17,000 people following us on X. We've grown our Instagram account, launched a WhatsApp channel, regularly posted videos to our TikTok channel, started a Threads account, and even recently made the leap onto Blue Sky. There are now more ways to consume your Chronicle than ever before. Our newsletters have exploded in popularity, and we've launched different types, so you can get the news you want directly in your email inbox every day. The morning briefing and daily roundup newsletters are the most popular, with more than 2,000 people signed up for each. We also have crime, business, or specific area newsletters, and we're soon to launch an exclusive subscriber newsletter. That brings me neatly to subscribers, our biggest fans. More than 700 people support the Chronicle in this way. Thank you to everyone who has signed up for the Hampshire Chronicle's digital subscription. I have spoken about the benefits of digital subscriptions before, but for just £3.99 per month, plus there are many great offers to sign up, readers can get full access to our website with fewer ads and can get a whole host of reader offers and competitions. And that's not to say we're just here for the subscribers. All website users get 20 free articles per month, then another 20 when they log in, which is free. Just need to verify your email address. Yes, some of our best content goes behind a paywall, as it costs us money to produce, but digital subscribers get access to it before it goes into the printed newspaper. Another great reason to sign up. To complement this, we launched an app last year and were proud when it was shortlisted for an award, proving that a relatively small weekly newspaper can still provide quality news through an app. Anyone can download the app, and even without a digital subscription, they can access 2 free articles per month. So why not give it a try? It's available on the Apple App Store or on Google's Play Store. Aside from all these digital innovations, what has made the Hampshire Chronicle stand out is what has made it great for more than 250 years. Quality local news. We have a core team of 3 reporters working from the city centre office who all either live in Winchester or the surrounding towns and villages. Chris, Seb and Charles know the patch, they are great at their jobs, and they all work incredibly hard to make sure the Chronicle has new and interesting items several times per day. They are overseen by Andrew Napier, a Winchester institution himself, who has reported on most things in Winchester in his 37-year reporting career. There's not much that gets past Andrew. Megan Stanley has been largely responsible for the Chronicle's digital growth, expanding onto other platforms and adapting to their frequent algorithm changes with unflappable grace. This year, we have adopted AI into our work with the help of an AI-assisted reporter, Sophie, and that's made us more efficient at representing our community. But I just want to say a genuine thank you to everyone who supports us as we try our very best to champion Winchester and give voices to people who would not normally be heard in our ever-busy digital lives. And please, do keep buying the printed newspaper too. We put a lot of work into it each week, and even though I say so myself, it's a very good read.
There are no special announcements this week. As we approach the winter solstice, the days are very short. Sunrise at the moment is around 8 o'clock in the morning, and sunset is at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229, and the number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We continue now with further items of news.
Will City Rise to Homes Challenge? Is Winchester a blocker and bureaucratic authority, or will it rise to the challenge of delivering the much needed new homes and increasing housing numbers significantly? This was the question put to the City Council Cabinet by former Conservative Councillor Ian Tate at a recent Cabinet meeting. The query comes after the government's announcement that it is absolutely willing to step in and take a local plan away from local authorities if it refuses to put one in place to meet home building targets. Winchester has been told this summer that it must plan for more houses, with the latest figure revealed this week of 1,157 a year, up from 676 under the Conservatives. Speaking at the gathering on December the 11th, Mr. Tate asked members why, considering the significant tracts of land available for building, the largest new developments were concentrated in a few areas far from Winchester. He said, "The Winchester district is the second largest in Hampshire with around 255 square miles. We have in the region of about 5% of that land classed as developed. So clearly we have significant tracts of land that could be built on, particularly if we delivered at higher densities, rather than the land-hungry executive homes we regularly see. In the current local plan, the bulk of the 12,500 new homes by 2031 are being delivered in the west of Waterlooville and the North Whiteley urban extension area. Many people in Winchester have very little realisation that these developments are actually in our district." He added, "The King's Barton development is comparatively small at 2,000 houses." Responding to Mr. Tate's query was Councillor Leader Martin Todd, who defended the Cabinet's plans to implement government targets. He said, "We will shortly have an announcement on the subject of our local plan, which lays out a carefully thought-through set of allocations across our district that does increase our housing numbers, is consistent with government policy and the objectives they've set for us, and the approach that they're taking. It does ask for higher densities, and it does look for development right across the district, whilst also reflecting the fact that 40% of our district is in the South Downs National Park and not under our direct planning control. We're building houses at a faster rate than many other local authorities in the country, and we are working in line with the government's policies, at least those of them we know about."
A spoof sign provokes laughter and criticism. A sign lampooning Winchester's Christmas market has incited both outrage and laughter in the city. In an anonymous Facebook post, one user denounced an orange notice, which has since disappeared, zip-tied to the fence near the cathedral. The direction sign read, "Christmas Market, pedestrian route to long queues, overpriced, cheaply made, worthless," I think that's crap, "misery and disappointment." On December the 15th, the anonymous user wrote, "What is wrong with people? This was spotted by security this morning, zip-tied to the cathedral fence. It is a horrible thing to put out there." Not saying it might not be true, but you don't have to advertise and slam your opinion in people's faces. Have a little decency and respect people in this festive season. This is just a low blow and disrespectful. While some Facebook users were sympathetic with the complaint, others felt the post could have been taken the sign with more of a sense of humour. Heather McMillan replied, "It actually made me laugh. I think that's what it was supposed to do. I think that is actually bang on. I'm personally fed up with the hordes and coachloads of people that come here to access the wonder of Winchester's overpriced Christmas market," wrote Bobsy Bobs. "I don't understand why these people pay to get on a coach and travel from other areas to be ripped off." A third commentator, Tony Hart Wilden, wrote, "I think the Christmas market is great, but the sign is hilarious."
1 million pound target gets close for the air ambulance. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance has raised £860,000 in just 12 weeks to relocate its airbase. The charity is hoping to reach £1 million of its £3.6 million goal by Christmas. This is part of its Operation Airbase appeal, which aims to convert and equip an existing building into a purpose-built airbase and office space. This is the charity's biggest fundraising appeal in its 17-year history, as it plans to relocate from its current airbase in Thruxton, Andover, to a site near Southampton Airport. The move will allow the doctors and paramedics to reach almost every patient in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight within 10 minutes of takeoff. Currently, it takes 20 minutes or more for some locations. The move is crucial, as 70% of the charity's call-outs are to the south of the region, Winchester, Southampton, Portsmouth and the Isle of Wight. The charity, now almost a quarter of its on the way to its target, is urging people across the region to donate and bring the helicopter and its crew closer to the community they serve year-round. Richard Corbett, the charity's CEO, said, "Most of us will know someone whose life has been affected by the air ambulance in one way or another. This move will mean we can get to even more patients, affect even more lives. The support we've received so far has been nothing short of phenomenal, and we can't thank everyone enough for their generosity."
Farm Shop enjoys busy first month with 7,000 customers. An independent business has had a busy first month in Winchester. Westlands Farm Shop, located at 154 Winchester High Street near the Broadway, has attracted more than 7,000 customers since it opened. The shop has made a name for itself as a go-to spot for high-quality, locally sourced goods. In its first month, it has sold over 500 loaves of fresh sourdough, more than 400 boxes of Vale Farm eggs, over 300 steaks from the butchery counter, more than 300 bottles of Cross Valley milk, and over 100 bottles of local ale. Westlands Farm Shop was officially opened by the Mayor, Russell Gordon Smith. The shop offers a variety of fresh fruit and vegetables, premium meats, and artisanal products, connecting city shoppers with Hampshire produce. It is the first greengrocer in the city centre since the closure of Taylor's on Bridge Street in the late 90s. Farm owner Graham Collett said, "The response has been nothing short of incredible. Winchester has shown so much enthusiasm for what we bring to the High Street, and it's been a joy to welcome so many new faces into our store. We're grateful for the support and are delighted to provide the city with a truly local shopping experience. The team and I are excited for what's to come as we continue to grow in this fantastic city."
Scores in City will spend Christmas with no home. More than 100 people in Winchester District will spend Christmas without a home, new estimates suggest. Research by housing charity Shelter suggests 354,000 people in England are homeless, a 14% jump from this time last year. In Winchester, Shelter estimates 136 people will be homeless this Christmas, including 61 children. The charity, which describes its research as a snapshot of the number of people recorded as homeless on a given night in 2024, blamed extortionate private rents and a dire lack of genuine affordable social homes for trapping more people in homelessness. The data includes rough sleepers, single people in hostels and people living in temporary accommodation arranged either by themselves, by councils or by social services. Shelter Chief Executive Polly Neat said, "As the country prepares to wind down and celebrate the festive season in our homes, it's unimaginable that 354,000 will spend this winter homeless. Many of them forced to shiver on the wet streets or in a mouldy hostel room with their entire family. Across England, extortionate private rents, combined with a dire lack of genuinely affordable social homes, is trapping more and more people in homelessness. Parents are spending sleepless nights worrying about their children growing up in cramped and often damaging temporary accommodation, as weeks and months turn into years without somewhere secure for them to call home. A spokesman for the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government said the figures are shocking, adding they show the devastating reality of the homelessness crisis. They said no one should have to spend Christmas without a home, and this government is taking urgent action to get us back on track to ending hopelessness, including committing £1 billion in funding to support homelessness services.
Care home residents brighten Christmas for children. Seven Hampshire care homes have helped a voluntary group brighten up Christmas for thousands of children. In what has become an annual campaign, Colton Care, supported by the Chocolate Elf, with donations of chocolate advent calendars and selection boxes. More than 200 calendars were collected this year for onward distribution through Chocolate Elf contacts in local councils, children's homes, charities, youth services, hospices, faith groups, and women's refuges. The Colton Care contributions were amassed ready for pickup at Winchester Dementia Care Home St Catherine's View and presented to Chocolate Elf organiser Peter Orme by a party including residents Sue Ouvry and Barbara Evans. Praising the incredible generosity of donors across the county, Peter said the Colton donations helped towards this year's grand total of 4,000 gifts for less advantaged children, channeled through more than 20 good causes. He said, "Without your kindness, they may have received little or nothing this Christmas. Hard times bring out the best in people, and we couldn't be more proud."
Bakers defy storm to raise funds. Homestart Winchester's fundraisers defied Storm Darragh to hold their annual bake sale. Despite the storm's efforts to dampen spirits, the charity's trustees, volunteers and friends remained undeterred to set up the stall under St Maurice's Covert. Chrissy Barlow, Homestart trustee and organiser, said, "We heard that the Cathedral Christmas Market had decided not to open, and there were no market traders that morning, which meant that there would be less people in the city centre. But after we'd spent so much time baking, we couldn't let all those goodies go to waste." Chrissy said, "We sold everything by lunchtime, by which time we couldn't feel our fingers or toes, but it was worth it to raise £630. The funds raised will be used for this year's Christmas party and to ensure that every child has gifts under the tree."
Boxing Day Hunt moves to Alresford. For the first time in living memory, the Boxing Day meet of the Hampshire Hunt will take place in Alresford. The gathering will be in Station Road at 11 a.m. on December the 26th. Everyone is welcome. Peregrine Rouse, chairman of the Hampshire Hunt, said, "The Hampshire Hunt is delighted to be gathering in Alresford for our traditional Boxing Day meet. This festive meet is a highlight of the trail hunting calendar for many in the local community and is an event that we eagerly look forward to each year. We have a very long connection with Alresford, 275 years since the formation of our club in 1749. Polly Portwin from the Countryside Alliance said, "Across the country, hundreds of meets will take place on Boxing Day and throughout the festive season, uniting thousands of people from diverse backgrounds in towns and villages, while showcasing the role that lawful hunting activities continue to have in the countryside. For many, especially those in isolated communities, these events are a highlight of the holiday period. At a time when high streets face challenges, meets bring vitality and support to local businesses, such as pubs, cafes and shops, providing a valuable economic uplift during a critical time of year. Earlier this year, there was criticism from the anti-hunt campaigners that the City Council allowed the closure to traffic of Station Road.
Ribbon cutting opens energy-efficient homes. Six new energy-efficient homes have been unveiled in Mitchell Devon. Winchester City Council has cut the ribbon to the affordable flats at Southbrook Cottages. The homes, which consist of 4 one-bed and 2 two-bed properties, have been built to the Passive House Plus standard. This means they require less energy to heat or cool than conventional homes, with the energy needed coming from renewable sources. The homes are therefore warmer, more comfortable, and cheaper for tenants to run. The energy efficiency of the homes is ensured by heat-efficient building materials and airtight construction. Excuse me. Exhaust air heat pumps provide efficient heating and hot water, whilst solar panels power the properties with renewable energy. The flats are expected to produce approximately 78% less carbon emissions and have 75% less running costs than homes built to building regulation standards. There are only around 2,900 Passive House certified homes across the UK, and even fewer have achieved the Passive House Plus standard. This makes Winchester City Council one of only a few local authorities to develop a Passive House Plus scheme as part of its drive to help the district become greener, faster. All six homes will be let out with affordable rent as part of the council's ambitions to provide homes for all. Councillor Chris Westwood, Cabinet Member for Housing, said, "We're working hard to address the need for housing across the district and are making really good progress towards our goal of providing 1,000 new homes. These six new affordable flats in Mitchell Devon mark another great step towards that target. I'm hugely proud, too, of the quality of the homes, which are a rare example of affordable homes in the country that meet cutting-edge Passive House Plus energy efficiency standards. They will be warmer, lower carbon, and cheaper to run for their future tenants. And I have no doubt they'll make fine homes. The homes are part of the council's goal to provide 1,000 new homes across the district. They are also part of the council's efforts to make the district greener."
Cabinet votes in favour of council's 5-year plan. The Cabinet at Winchester City Council has voted unanimously in favour of its plan for the next 5 years. On December the 11th, all 7 of the Council's Liberal Democrat Cabinet members agreed on the plan, which has 6 priorities: thriving places, good homes for all, healthy communities, effective and efficient, listening and learning, and greener, faster. Some of the aims of the plan include making the district carbon neutral by 2030, promoting strong, sustainable business growth, supporting those suffering from the cost of living crisis, and delivering 1,000 more council homes by 2032. The discussion at the meeting focused on these ambitions, one of which is to help businesses attract local workers. Cabinet member Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "We want to see the retention of some of that homegrown talent, and that does, of course, involve working together with partners, such as the university, but also businesses themselves, and finding out what businesses need." Councillor Kathleen Becker, also a Cabinet member, said, I think this plan is a clear demonstration of our values and our aspirations for our wonderful district. She praised the emphasis on healthy communities, adding that she thought the difference in life expectancy between members of different communities within the city was absolutely heartbreaking.
It's outstanding. School celebrates Ofsted rating. A Winchester primary school has been rated outstanding in 4 out of 5 categories in its latest Ofsted inspection. St Bede's Church of England Primary School in Gordon Road Hyde was one of the first in the area to be inspected under the new Ofsted framework. The school was rated outstanding in 4 categories and good in the 5th. The report said, "This is a happy and joyful school where pupils arrive keen to learn and leave each day buzzing with ideas." The school was last inspected in 2013, when it was also rated outstanding. The report also praised the school's strong academic achievements in English and maths, which are significantly above the typical results achieved nationally. Inspectors said, "Passionate and inspiring leadership underpins the shared aspirations and standards achieved here. Dedicated staff support all pupils to benefit from the rich curriculum, which is enhanced by a range of experiences and clubs. Pupils immerse themselves in all that is on offer. They become confident, collaborative learners who achieve well." Ofsted also found that parents and carers report that the school feels like a family. The report continued, "They value how their children flourish in this caring and inclusive learning environment. Kindness is everywhere throughout the school. Pupils are nurtured to feel safe and protected and are given opportunities to shine." Sarah Duck, head teacher of St Bede's, said, "We are delighted that the Ofsted team were able to identify many of the unique features which make our school such a special place to be. I'm grateful to work with such dedicated colleagues who've helped to achieve this tremendous result." The school's Home and School Association arranged for a special visit from the Rhyme Rocket team to celebrate the school's achievement. The team performed a live version of the Ridiculous Rhyme Show for the pupils. Years 5 and 6 also attended a television and media workshop where they learned what happens in a TV studio and explored careers in the media industry.
36 babies buried in unmarked grave. Dozens of babies were buried in an unmarked and simple grave by a Christian care home in Winchester, an investigation has revealed. A total of 36 infants who were born to mothers housed at the Winchester Diocesan Maternity Home were interred at Magdalen Hill Cemetery to the east of the city. Some of them were stillborn, whilst the others all died at a very young age, ranging from 1 year to just a few hours old. The news comes after ITV News published an investigation revealing several similar cases across Britain, all involving church-run homes. Burials were often carried out in secret and without the knowledge of families. A Freedom of Information request made to Winchester City Council reveals the names of the babies buried in Winchester, as well as the two mothers, aged 17 and 32, buried near them, they too in unmarked plots. The first baby in the care of the Winchester Diocesan Maternity Home to be buried this way died in 1921, whilst the last one died in 1957. The response to the Freedom of Information response by the council says, "With regards to your request above, the first burial at Magdalen Hill Cemetery was March 1916. so we have no records previous to this date. I have found registered 36 named babies, and they are all buried in a simple grave, unmarked. And I found two mothers who died at the above address, both in unmarked graves. It's unclear where this simple grave, unmarked, is in the cemetery. Between 1949 and the mid-1970s, an estimated 200,000 women were sent away to mother and baby homes run by churches and the state, where infants were taken from their mothers or died through poor care. Dr. Michael Lambert is a historian of the welfare state at Lancaster University and has spent years investigating these institutions. He told ITV News that unmarried mothers and their children were treated like second-class citizens. Once babies were no longer seen as desirable for adoption, he said, they were treated substandardly and weren't given the modern medical care which a legitimate child at this time would have had. Dr. Lambert said the true number of mass unmarked graves from this period was likely to be much higher. ITV News obtained records connected to 8 homes. There were more than 150 operating across England for decades. In the decades after World War II, being pregnant outside of wedlock was the ultimate taboo. Mothers faced shame and stigma and were pressured into putting their children up for adoption.
Inspiring nativity play boosts Boaz Project. An inspiring nativity performance raised hundreds of pounds for a charity that helps adults with learning disabilities. A heartwarming Christmas nativity titled The Shiny Bright Sparkling Light brought festive joy to a beautifully decorated barn in Sutton Scotney last Friday, December the 6th. Presented by the Boaz Project, a farm-based initiative for adults with learning disabilities, the production whisked the audience away to a galaxy far, far away, where a young, eager star trains to become a guiding light. Written by the Bible Society, the story follows this junior star as she transforms into the star Nav, ultimately leading the wise men to Bethlehem. There she discovers a light even brighter than her own, Jesus, the light of the world. Lucy was a standout star as a determined stargent in camouflage, tasked with putting the junior star through her paces. Though unable to attend due to illness, Lucy's acting skills shone through in pre-recorded scenes, cleverly integrated via a blue screen setup. In his short talk, guest speaker Dominic Lodge noted that Lucy's name aptly means bearer of light in Latin. Reflecting on his earlier visit to the Boaz Project, Mr. Lodge praised the Christian charity as a place of love, care and kindness. True to the spirit of community nativities, there were a few missed cues and chaotic moments. Last-minute casting saw the role of Mary filled by a young girl from the audience. Boaz's three resident donkeys, Sky, Dominic and Dave, helped create the authentic feel of a Bethlehem stable, while real sheep added to the festivities, baa-baaing along during the carol singing. Andover Salvation Band and Barton Stacey Chamber Choir provided uplifting musical accompaniment, with Boaz member Julian joining the choir for this special performance. In his welcome address, Chairman of Boaz Trustees Peter Loder reflected on 2024 as a stellar year for the charity. He said there had been an increase in day places for members and improvements to the allotment garden, barn heating, lighting and toilets. He also expressed gratitude to the 50-plus volunteers who generously give up their time to work and learn alongside members. Among the VIP guests was the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, who described the evening as inspiring. A special collection and sale of handmade Christmas cards, jams and preserves raised nearly £800 to support the Boaz Project.
Chawton House hosts a festive wonderland. Chawton House has been transformed into a festive wonderland with hundreds of handmade decorations. The rooms are dressed to tell five popular Christmas tales, immersing visitors in beloved stories. Visitors can see the elves and their shoes, join Clara and her nutcracker to battle mischievous mice, and spot all the 12 days of Christmas in the dining room. The Snow Queen's parlour and the Great Hall with its enormous tree are also part of the festive display. Every decoration has been crafted by the Chawton House Christmas Committee, a group of volunteers who've dedicated hundreds of hours to creating the 2024 festive season. For younger visitors, there's a trail and crafts, and while adults can enjoy a display in the library about beautiful bindings. The festive spirit extends outside with the glimmering gardens where thousands of fairy lights illuminate the historic gardens. Visitors are encouraged to spot the woodland creatures that call Chawton House home. The house was the home of Jane Austen's brother. The old kitchen tea room is offering hot drinks, a festive menu, and homemade mince pies. The shop is stocked with unique gifts and stocking fillers. Chief Executive Katie Childs said, "What makes a storybook Christmas so sensational is how beautifully detailed and funny it is. Even the most committed Scrooge could not fail to be swept up in the magic of Christmas and smile at the cheeky elves, marvel at the knitted reindeer, and salute the six-foot nutcracker soldier. We look forward to welcoming visitors of all ages here over Christmas and the New Year." Entry to a storybook Christmas and glimmering gardens is included in the day and annual tickets, with the usual passes and concessions. However, Chawton House will be open for guided tours only on Monday, December the 16th, and closed on Tuesday, December the 17th, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and Boxing Day. The festive transformation of Chawton House promises to be a magical experience for visitors of all ages, with its combination of beautifully crafted decorations, enchanting stories, and the twinkling lights of the glimmering garden.
College celebrates 20 years as outstanding. A Winchester College is celebrating two decades of being rated outstanding by Ofsted. Peter Simmons was rated outstanding in every area of its work following a recent inspection. The four-day review involved inspectors speaking with students, parents, staff, stakeholders, governors, and the college's leadership team. The inspection found that students, quote, enjoy learning in an environment where they are encouraged to excel, are part of a deeply inclusive environment that celebrates and respects diversity. The college was credited for the outstanding quality of education, a culture that drives exceptional outcomes for all students and exceptionally well-coordinated support. Principal Sarah Russell said, "Simmons is a special place. I am thrilled that Ofsted's latest report captures the whole spectrum of things that make Simmons exceptional. I am incredibly proud of this college."
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye and a happy Christmas.
John Richards.
Goodbye, Merry Christmas to you all.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye and Merry Christmas from me too.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. On behalf of us all at the Talking Newspaper, I would like to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a very happy, healthy and prosperous New Year. The next edition of the Talking Newspaper will be recorded on Friday the 10th of January, when I will again be presenting. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.